Good afternoon. We are back with the Shamo Hoops podcast. We are in the thick of college basketball season right now with a lot of strong conference games going on. And pleased to have on as a guest this week, first-time guest, longtime friend, Dan Russo, Big East guru and an avid college hoops fan. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, Sean. Thanks for having me on to listen to the first six or seven Shamo Hoops pods, and glad to be able to join in and add in some Big East flavor to the pod.
Well, before we get to the Big East, you had the pleasure this weekend of chalking something off of, I'd say probably most college basketball fans' bucket list of going to game at Fog Allen in Kansas, the Kansas State game where Kansas won by 1 point. So, you know, probably of all the games you could have gone to, a pretty ideal first time in Lawrence, but I'm very curious to know your thoughts on the atmosphere, the game, the arena. So how was it on Saturday afternoon?
Great question. Yeah, Fog was definitely the number one arena I wanted to go to on the college basketball bucket list. I've been to some of the bigger ones and all six rounds of the NCAA tournament, and this is my favorite college basketball experience, non-Georgetown related that I've ever had. Went with a group of KU alums, so I don't know that they were particularly happy with the outcome, even though they won by a point. A little nerve-wracking for them, but for me, like you said, seeing a rivalry game that came down to a last possession was phenomenal. Fog is definitely smaller than I was expecting. Not a bad seat in the house. We had general admission tickets, so got there an hour or so early, hour and a half early. Stood in line for a little bit in the freezing cold and the 25-degree temperatures, 20-degree temperatures. But it was worth it as we were the third row of general admission when we were able to storm in like you see the college kids do on Big Monday or some of the other big games. So had a pretty good view vantage point right behind where Kansas State came out of the locker room, so kind of in a corner. I was able to watch them attacking on the first half and then Kansas in the second half, and it's just a great venue. Before the game, you know, you hear the Rock Chalk chant and loud. That was one of the things that definitely struck me. They had a decibel meter, and they got up. It got up to 116.3. I think was the highest I saw it. So, just a great, great, incredible atmosphere for college basketball. I was going to say after the game, I was able to walk around and see the rules. James Naismith's original rules are there, and they have a pretty awesome kind of monument to college to Kansas basketball, like a Hall of Fame area with all their trophies and retired jerseys and that kind of thing.
Cool. Well, I know I was in the area a few years ago in the summer and tried to get in, but they were doing renovations on it, so didn't even get to even see the floor, but hopefully one day. But I'm curious, for the general admission, is that the whole kind of second level, or how do they do the general admission there?
So they do it. It's like a lot of colleges, right behind the hoops is on one side marching band, on the other side they have a student section, and then kind of off to the sides, they have the general admission on the sidelines, kind of where you get your really good views. Those are tickets that you get a specific seat. Those are the big money tickets. So I think Fox seats right around 16,000. There's probably 2,000-4,000 somewhere in that range for general admission.
Okay. Well, in terms of the game, it came down to the last second shot. Monte Graham had a good game, as did Azubuki from Kansas. But in terms of the actual game, what kind of stood out to you for Kansas or Kansas State?
Yeah, I was actually expecting a blowout. I wasn't super high on Kansas State going in. I'd seen them play a couple of times, but they actually looked pretty good. Wade, kind of their big man, was pretty impressive. He kind of was a contrasting style for Azubuki. Couldn't guard him at all, but was able to step out and knock down some jumpers. Kansas was doubling him nonstop, and he made some good passes out of the double. On the Kansas side, probably the more interesting side for most college basketball fans. I was pretty underwhelmed by them. They came out strong. They were moving the ball well on offense, playing pretty good D. And then about halfway through the first half, I really stagnant on offense. Stopped moving it. Stopped passing the ball around, and started jacking a lot of contested threes and let Kansas stay back in the game. And after that, I was pretty much nip tucked the rest of the way. Kansas starting five, not bad with Graham and Svi and Azubuike leading the way, but they don't have really anything off the bench. It was D'Souza's first game, and he got a tremendous reaction from the crowd. He stood up and took his warm-ups off, but looked out of place in his 3 minutes of action. A couple of couple of turnovers and just kind of lost on D. So I mean, it's got to be tough for him. He's only been with the team for about 2 weeks, and coming into a rivalry game for your first action is gotta be tough, but he's got a long way to go.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I would be surprised if Kansas does get a lot out of him. I know he was, you know, ranked fairly high, but was never too impressed with him when I saw him in high school. And then, you know, coming in, as you said, in the middle of Big 12 play, definitely doesn't help. I was kind of surprised to see my buddy Sam Cunliffe only get 4 minutes, so I wonder if he'll be getting any more playing time. And I doubt Billy Preston will be getting cleared. Although if he does, that would be a nice boost. But with a few other players in the NCAA getting ruled ineligible, I would be surprised to see him on the floor in the near future.
I was just going to throw in on Sam Cunliffe. He only played a couple minutes in the first half. He came in, threw up an air ball from the corner, three, and pretty much came right back out and then didn't get in again. I know he's only been with it. I mean, he joined them midway through the year, so he played in, I think, 7 games, but averaging under 10 minutes. And you would think they could use him, given that they only really go 6 deep, but it may be 7 deep if you count Rich Lightfoot as their only backup big man. But yeah, he didn't get any run. In terms of Billy Preston, I think I texted you during the game. Kansas has more talent, I think, that's sitting out this year than they do on their roster. With between Preston and the Lawson brothers and Charlie Moore from California, they have a lot of talent. They look good in sweatsuits. But the four of those guys were sitting at the end of the bench in the first half, and then the second half, actually, Billy Preston sat down in between a couple of the assistant coaches, just a couple seats down from Bill Self. So it looked like they were, you know, talking to him about how to play and about what they were seeing. So, you know, part of me wondered if maybe he is potentially going to come back in the next couple of weeks, and they're trying to get him prepared as much as possible.
Ah, well, that is something interesting and something I definitely didn't notice. And that if he does come back, that'll be a huge boost because that gives him some size and some athleticism that they definitely need coming off the bench. But at the end of the game, I know Kansas is famous for kind of the rock chalk chant at the end. Normally, they're usually always winning their home game, so it happens almost every time. But with a last second shot, did that happen at the end, or did you get to kind of hear that as the game ended?
No, heard it. We heard it in the beginning before they announced the lineups, but didn't get it at the end. I was, you know, the final shot clanged off, and I was hoping to hear it. And I kind of stood there for a couple minutes, and folks just started filing out, and so didn't get to hear it at the end, unfortunately.
Well, that's too bad about that, but at least you got to go to a game there, and definitely a close and competitive game. So hopefully I'll be able to see a game there at some point in the future, but I'm sure that was fairly enjoyable to go watch, and probably definitely a different scene than the live games I went to this week, which both included USC home games, USC Colorado, and then USC Utah, just to check out some Pac-12 action. But unlike Kansas, for the Colorado game, I was able to get a seat in the second row behind the basket for $9 the day of, and then was able to get a seat for Utah for two seats for $12 on Sunday. So Definitely a little bit of a different atmosphere, but still fun to watch some high level hoops. I think two of the teams each year we do a basketball pool, which I think is probably the best pool, whether it's football or basketball, that we do, of basically picking 10 teams all in a dollar value out of 100. And I know we are looking at Colorado and Utah as potential teams. Colorado was coming off the Arizona and Arizona State wins, but they kind of got dominated in the second half, although I'm a big fan of George King, who I think could be a potential 3-and-D guy in the NBA down the road. But then Utah, when I got to the Utah game, they're up 6-0, and then they got outscored 32-5 by USC, who was definitely just running at another gear. So, we'll see how both of those teams do, but in terms of Utah, I'm definitely glad we did not end up going with them, although there's a few other teams I wish we had changed up. But USC, we'll see how they do on the road going to Oregon State, but living in LA, I get to see them a lot, and it'll be interesting to see if they can get back to their preseason potential of being a top 15 team. But definitely a different experience than watching Kansas at the Fog, I'm sure.
Yeah, I think probably just given the ability to get day of tickets at those prices. But I'm interested in USC, as you mentioned, was so highly regarded coming into the year, and they kind of struggled at kind of between Thanksgiving and Christmas. But with the Pac-12 is seemingly being down, with Arizona State coming back down, and I was kind of underwhelmed when I saw UCLA play in person against Michigan earlier this year. Do you see USC having a chance to win the Pac-12?
I think it's, Arizona has a loss. Talent-wise, they're definitely at the top, although, they've given Sean Miller some fits. So, they have one loss. USC has two losses, one of which, they basically gave away at Stanford, losing on a half, more than a half court heave. So, they really could have swept the past four games. They've been playing better, just put in Shaquan Aaron into the starting lineup, which was a move that I like, just because he's a very I'd say moody player. If he hits his first shot, he's probably gonna have a good game. If he misses it, he's gonna have a not so good game. But I think putting him in the lineup gives him a little more confidence. And then they have Jonah Matthews, the younger brother of Jordan Matthews from Gonzaga, coming off the bench, and he lit it up. They have a lot of talent. Elijah Stewart, I think they started off 14 to 25 from three. So it really depends if they can hit shots. Chimezie Metu has first round potential. I'm still, he showed a lot of glimpses his freshman year and has been getting better, but you still want to see a little bit more from him. And they have some talent off the bench, but definitely missing De'Anthony Melton, who was one of those guys who got wrapped up in the FBI sting. So, it'll be interesting to see how they do at Oregon, but I think them and Arizona are the two best teams. Unfortunately, they only play each other in Arizona, so they don't come to LA. And I think, Arizona State, they were getting a lot of hype, but have kind of fallen back down to earth in conference play. Losing to Oregon at home and then barely beating Oregon State. So I think, yeah, I think, USC, they're starting to get things turned around and playing better. So I think it'll be a USC and Arizona race to the finish line for the Pac-12. One thing I was curious about over the holidays and Christmas, I got to go to the Georgetown Butler game. So double overtime, Georgetown was up almost 20 points in the first half, but kind of, gave up their lead, not being aggressive. But you for a long time you've had Georgetown season tickets, and you follow them pretty closely, but was just kind of curious about your thoughts on Big Patrick as a head coach and kind of how the Hoyas have done so far this year.
Yeah, it's a tough question. I think they have been probably exceeded my expectations. You know, their out of conference schedule was mocked pretty much by everybody. I think, you know, Ken Pomeroy said it was one of the worst, if not the worst, non conference schedule he's seen since he started running his website. But you know, in Patrick's defense, I think the team, while not super young, they had a lot of learning to do. Jesse Govan and Marcus Derrickson up front are pretty talented and definitely Big East level players and guys that you can build a team around. But aside from that, there's not a ton of talent, and the only the talent they have are freshmen, so just learning. So they got off to a hot start and just had the one loss out of conference to Syracuse in a game that they, I mean, realistically should have won. I think maybe if they had played a few more talented teams before Syracuse, they probably wouldn't have folded under pressure and given away the lead like they did in the last few minutes. And then, you know, they're 2-4 in the Big East, right? So they've beaten DePaul and St. John's. St. John's on the road, I guess, is a pretty good win, although they've been underwhelming. While you know, going into the season, a lot of folks thought they might be on the bubble, and they've been, I think they're in last place or tied with DePaul for last place in the Big East. And like you said, the other game that Georgetown, I think, has played well in, was the Butler game, where they ran out to a 20-point lead. Looked really good. And then that was their Big East opener. And then the second half just folded up shop. And that, I think, is a testament to the lack of point guard play and just guard play in general that they have. So to me, I know Patrick is, he's got the guys playing hard, which has been nice to see. I think there's been a little bit more fire and passion than in past years. The X's and O's, I think, are pretty good as well. I, you know, I didn't really have too much fear that he was going to be good at that. You know, having been in the NBA as a coach for 15 years, I think he knows what he's doing there. My concern is on the recruiting side. You know, he's never done it before, and he was a little older. You wonder how hungry he's going to be, right? He's already made his millions, but they have a couple of 4-stars already signed, and Jordan Tucker, the transfer from Duke, is actually down to Butler and Georgetown. I think he's expected to decide this week. So you know, they're out there beating the trail. I know Robert Kirby, one of his assistants, was responsible for finding Otto Porter during his last stint at Georgetown. So you know, I think if they can recruit, they can get back towards the top. Maybe not compete with Villanova, but be in the top 2 or 3 of the Big East on a continuous basis.
Yeah, I mean, I think recruiting will be big for them. You know, I was, even though they lost, I was impressed by how they played, and I know they took a lot of crap, you know, on Twitter and pretty much from everybody about their schedule, but I mean, I never really saw anything wrong with it. I wasn't a season ticket holder, so, you know, I wasn't going to the games, but, you know, I think it was a young team that lost a lot from transfers and people leaving, and you have a new coach, and, you know, why not try to build some wins and get some confidence? And, you know, maybe it would have helped against Syracuse and Butler, maybe not. But, you know, they did show, you know, I was pretty impressed, especially, you know, with Gavon and Derrickson, who've been around for a while, but, you know, they definitely lost some focus, and, you know, the right players weren't getting the ball at the right times. But I think that kind of goes back to the point guard play. You know, I was impressed by Jamarco Pickett. I don't know how you pronounce his first name, but in terms of how long and lanky he was, you know, I think maybe next year as a junior, if he's still around, will definitely turn out to be a good one. But recruiting-wise, it'll be interesting, and I'm very interested to see how Patrick does. Unfortunately for you, I did see that Jordan Tucker went with Butler today, so that is a loss on the recruiting trail, which would have been big. But in terms of, it's been a few, you know, I'd say definitely a few years since Georgetown has really dominated the DC Catholic League in terms of recruiting, which is, I'd say, probably the most competitive league year in and year out in the country. I know there's several top 100 players over the next few years, so they can get back to, you know, what they had when Austin Freeman and Chris Wright, and, you know, just getting all those DC guys and add in some Baltimore and Virginia guys, I think they should be able to get back pretty quickly. You know, we'll see what happens with Maryland. I thought, you know, with the FBI thing, that eventually they might get caught up in that, or at least their recruiting might get knocked down. So we'll we'll see. But the DC area is very fertile, so we'll see if Patrick can start getting some of those local guys.
Yeah, definitely. The WCAC is one of, if not the strongest, high school basketball conference in the country. So a lot of talent. Now there's been a lot of good guards coming out of there lately. So if they can scoop up one or two of those, I think they'd be in a good spot.
Yeah, I mean, I think in terms of also, challenging Villanova, Villanova's just been running over the Big East the past few years. I mean, they won the championship 2 years ago and a one seed last year, but they've been recruiting very well from the Maryland and DC area. So if Patrick can kind of get back to some of the John Thompson days of really just closing that area off or making Georgetown that premier school again, I think definitely good things can happen. But it was obvious that John Thompson had kind of lost that edge, whether it was playing style or what have you. So definitely will be interesting to see how the next few recruiting periods go, but I'm sure at least Georgetown fans get to watch the YouTube highlights and Instagram hits of McClung down from Southern Virginia, who is I think a 6'4" white guy that can just jump out of the gym and usually has some pretty ridiculous dunks. So we'll see if any of that translate, but it's at least exciting to watch online.
Yeah, for sure. He's got a little bit of buzz on the fan base. And we'll see. Hopefully he can round out his game and be the point guard they're looking for, 'cause he is the only guard recruit they have to go along with a couple of more highly regarded forwards. So, but yeah, you mentioned Villanova. They kind of took off when they actually started coming into Baltimore and DC and poaching talent, right? When you think about Chris Jenkins and Josh Hart, both DC kids, who were their stars of their title teams, and then even Phil Booth from Maryland, who played a big role and is still a starter for them.
He won them the championship, or at least
Right,
played
had
a
it.
large part. So hypothetical for you, Tre'Mont Waters, LSU's point guard, freshman point guard, who's been playing extremely well in the SEC. He was committed to Georgetown and decommitted once Thompson got fired, I think, around that point. But if Tre'Mont was at Georgetown, how'd they be doing this season so far in the Big East, do you think?
Yeah, I mean they're 2-4 in the Big East. They have a couple of closer losses. One really close one, right? That Butler double overtime loss. They were blown out by Creighton. I think they would. They're 2-4 in the Big East and 12-5 overall. I think at worst, if they had Tre'Mont, they'd be 14-3. I think they would have closed out the Syracuse and Butler games where they gave up big leads by. They were turning the ball over when they started getting pressured, and Waters, as we've seen at LSU, can handle the pressure and distribute. So I do think they would have at least two more wins. The Creighton, I mean, they just got pummeled by Creighton. I don't think much was going to change that game. Seton Hall, they were actually up. They just lost to Seton Hall this past Saturday. They were up double digits in the first half and gave up a big run right before halftime that you'd like to think a steady point guard might have helped with, so maybe they win that game. So I'd have them pegged at either 15-2 overall, or 14-3. And just given how weak their schedule is, I think that would probably put them on the right side of the bubble, but still on the bubble. Well, he's only Tremont's like I think 5'10", right? So probably not going pro anytime soon. And as the top point guard freshman in the country, he's being overshadowed by Trae Young. So I think he would have been at least a 3-year guy, and he definitely would have been a building block for Patrick if they could have gotten him to recommit after JT3 was let go.
Yeah, I love Tre'Mont from when I first saw him as a freshman in high school, and he was probably 5'7" at the most at that point in time. So I was kind of hoping Patrick Ewing was going to be able to nab him once he got the job. Especially looking at his stats, which are pretty ridiculous for a freshman: 41% from three, and then top 50 in assist rate and steal rate as a freshman is pretty impressive. Definitely would have helped against Seton Hall, where the spread was 12 points, which I took, and they lost by 13. So might have been able to cover on that one with Tre'Mont in the fold. But hopefully, going forward, they can they can get back to recruiting the talent that they are used to getting at Georgetown. So we'll see how that unfolds. But you know, with this week, a lot of good action going on. You know, Duke just beat Miami on Big Monday, and a lot of other games this week. So I just want to go through a few of the teams in the top 10 and the top 25, and just see if you or I think these teams are for real, or if they're going to go out early in the tournament. So why don't we just start with, you know, the team that's been number one for most of the year, Villanova. They've been, you know, consistently over the past 3 years, probably one of the best programs there is. And right now they sit at 16-1 with only one loss in conference play to Butler. But are you buying or selling Villanova?
I think I will. I think we'll buy Villanova. You know, I'm a little down actually on their talent. I don't think they're as talented as past years, but with Jay Wright at the helm, you know, they kind of always are tough and fundamentally sound. They're not going to beat themselves, and they have really good guard play. And I think, you know, right when you get into March, that's probably the most important aspect in being steady. So I'll buy Villanova.
Okay, I'm going to buy them as well. I mean, their guards are great with Brunson, DiVincenzo, Phil Booth, and then you have Bridges, who, you know, the NBA draft guys are loving, and Spellman, who's finally getting to play. As you said, they're a little short on depth in the front court, but you know, with Jalen Brunson leading the way, they're definitely going to be in contention. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did get upset, you know, somewhere to Wisconsin, but you know, they are consistent and will be tough to beat in the tournament. You know, I think another hypothetical would be how would Villanova have fared these past 3 years without Jalen Brunson? You know, going back in time, Jalen Brunson's dad, Rick, former NBA player, was hired as a Temple assistant coach right before Jalen went into his senior year in Illinois, I believe. And he ended up, you know, having a incident at the health club with a masseuse and got charged and lost his Temple job. So it's very, you know, if that hadn't happened and he was at Temple, would Jalen have gone to Temple? And if so, you know, how would Villanova be faring? So I think that's an interesting question, but not to, you know, stray too far. You know, number two in the country, Virginia. Are you buying or selling the Wahoos?
So I know you have a love-hate relationship with UVA, so I'm interested in your response. But I am going to sell the Wahoos. I do love Tony Bennett. I think he's probably one of the top five coaches in college basketball at the moment. But again, I just don't see as much talent as they've had in years past, and they haven't been able to get the proverbial monkey off their back right and get to a Final Four. And I don't think this is the year.
I'm selling Virginia. I mean, I'm buying Tony Bennett because he is a fantastic coach that you know, just has year in and year out one of the top defenses in the country. It doesn't really matter who is on the team; they're going to be one of the top defenses with their pack line style of play. You know, offensively, obviously they play slow, but they're usually efficient. I do really like Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome, and the fact that they're just sophomores. I think, you know, them being there the next 3 years, you know, will the UVA fans will love. You know, I think this year definitely more depth than maybe in years past, and maybe even a little bit more athleticism with, you know, they have Isaiah Wilkins and Diakite and Nigel Johnson coming off the bench, and Devon Hall, who's been, you know, lights out from three and definitely one of their top players as the senior leader. But, you know, each year they dominate on the home court and they don't really beat themselves. So they're going to finish the regular season with a great record. Comes into tournament time, I think they're a one or two seed, but I think they're really a one or two seed disguised as a real life four or five seed, as we saw last year when they scored 39 points in Florida. Tony Bennett's style of play, teams start to focus a little more. Maybe some of the hand checks that go uncalled in ACC play start to start to get called when the refs are actually looking at freedom of motion. So I think, you know, regular season, they'll be great, but I still don't really believe in them in the tournament. I think, you know, 2 years ago they had a great shot to win it with Brogdon and Anthony Gill and really some NBA talent. But we all know, and you were at the game of Syracuse when they blew that lead. So I'm buying Tony Bennett as a great coach. It doesn't really matter who's on his team, and he's able to recruit, you know, for the most part, these under the radar kids and get them playing at a five-star level, but still down on them as a tournament team.
Yeah, I think you probably summed it up with their challenges with the tournament. So number three, I want to get your thoughts on Purdue. You know, it's somebody that was certainly not ranked this high coming into the year, but has been really good and only has two losses on the year. What do you think about Purdue?
I don't know. I guess I'm buying Purdue to be a good team. I really like Matt Painter as a coach, and Carson Edwards, I'm a big fan of. Haas has been around for a while, as has Vincent Edwards. You know, Nodell Eastern hasn't really done much, but he could start to gain a little bit of time down the road, along with Mathai Dakota, who's a lights out shooter. So I'm buying them. I mean, you know, in terms of the Big Ten, I never really think any of the Big Ten teams are that good. The fact that Ohio State is 6-0, I think, kind of sums that up. When Ohio State played UNC, never did I once fear that UNC was going to lose, and that's coming from a team that has lost to Wofford and gotten smoked by UVA and Michigan State. So I'm buying them, but, you know, I think they're a good team, definitely not a Final Four team. I still think that's Michigan State in the Big Ten, despite their subpar conference play. But I just think they have the most talent. But you know, Purdue's a well-coached team and usually, you know, pretty fun to watch. What are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, you know, I think that, you know, this might be one of those years, right? They've been good for the past couple and haven't been able to get over the hump. You know, this may be one of those years where a little undervalued coming in, and like you said, they have a lot of upperclassmen who have been through it, been in those tough games. I really like the brothers Edwards, although they're not brothers, but they both are really, really good, really talented, and have been starters there for a couple of years. You know, Haas, I think he's averaging 15, which is more than I thought he would probably ever average in his career when he was a freshman, but he plays good D and rebounds and does kind of those little things. And Dakota Mathias, I think, in addition to being the kind of the knockdown shooter you mentioned, I think he's shooting 46% from three. He does those little things, right? He gets up and guards and rebounds and takes charges. So I think they have a good team. And, you know, the more I watch them and Michigan State, I actually think they're better than Michigan State.
Well, I'm trying to look to see when they play each other, but that'll definitely be a Big Ten game I'll be watching, as you know, normally Big Ten games are not at the top of my list, but it looks like they're not playing for a little while in February, so have some time to wait and see how those teams do. But what about, I know Oklahoma's 4 and everybody loves Trae Young, but let's skip over them and go to the Dukies. They just beat Miami pretty handily in the last, you know, 5 to 8 minutes on the road. Great offense, porous defense, but what are your thoughts on them?
Yeah, you know, they really locked down Miami in the last 6 or so minutes of the game. Came from, I think, down 13 in the second half. Trent was huge. He's had a couple big games. I think he was 6 of 7 earlier in the week from three, and then he had 30 tonight. So, you know, if they can get him playing well to go along with Bagley, and Wendell Carter was had another double-double tonight, I think they're really tough. Grayson Allen struggled today, but, you know, it was good, made some hustle plays, had a steal at the end of the half that really led to a three at the buzzer that really helped them as they were down, I think, 8 at that point and cut it to 5 before the half. You know, I like this Duke team. I think they're really talented. Like you said, their D could be a problem. If they have an off shooting night in the tournament and they haven't figured out their D yet, that's how upsets happen. But I do think they may be they may be well served to play some more zone. They played some today against Miami, and it seemed to be pretty good for them. And I just don't know that with all those freshmen that they figured out how to play play man the way Coach K likes. So I think if they try playing zone more, they have a real shot at cutting down the nets.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think over the last 5 years, Coach K has pretty much given up on coaching defense and just basically relying on offense. And I always believe that a good offense beats a good defense. So unfortunately, I'm buying Duke, but you know, with Bagley and Carter, it's pretty much impossible to stop, you know, those guys as just athletic, agile bigs. And then, you know, you have, especially if Trent starts coming along with, you know, giving shooting on the wing with Trent and Allen, and then Duvall, while he can't shoot a lick, he can get to the basket any time. And, you know, it almost doesn't matter really what their bench is. I know Coach K has complained about their bench despite having numerous McDonald's All-Americans sitting on it, but when you have those five, you don't really need a whole lot more. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they did get upset, but it wouldn't surprise me to see them make another deep run in the tournament. So I'm going to do one more team. I'm going to go back to the Big East, but Xavier, who's sitting at 16-3. I know as a Georgetown fan, you're a big fan of some of their players. JP McCura has won, but do you think they're going to be able to make another deep run? Obviously not as an underdog this year, but as a high seed.
You know, I've always been a little bit down on Xavier going into the tournament the last couple of years, and they constantly overachieve. And this year, I actually thought they were going to be really good. I liked Quentin Gooden last year as a point guard, and obviously everybody knows Blewett and McCura. They're both really good on the wing. And I've been impressed this year by Kareem Kanter, Enos's little
yep.
brother. He's been really good, coming on strong lately. And Najee Marshall as well, another freshman from the D.C. area, playing a wing and just kind of, I mean, he doesn't look like a freshman, been rugged, good defender, able to get to the basket and score a little bit. But no, I am going to sell Xavier. They just don't seem to be, I don't know, they just don't, they, when I've watched them, they've been a little underwhelming to the eye test. They have a lot of talent, but I think Blewett's been a little up and down, and you really, really need him to be on for four games in the tournament to get to the Final Four, and I just haven't seen it from them. I'm going to sell on Xavier.
All right, I don't know. I'm going to buy. I mean, I was pretty surprised that I thought they would have a more competitive game against Villanova. I wasn't really surprised to see them lose to Providence on the road, but thought they would give a little bit better of an effort against Villanova, but then they came back and beat Creighton by 22. And just like you said, Kanter has been really impressive, especially coming off the bench. So to kind of, you know, if Blewett and McCura can get their games going and they're shooting, they'll be dangerous in the tournament. And definitely like Marshall, who, as you said, a D.C. guy, played on one of the premier D.C. AU teams. So, you know, just another guy down the road, somebody like him, if Pat is able to keep him in town, will be beneficial. But I'm going to buy just more based on the tournament hopes of them being able to make a run with their offensive firepower. Are there any other teams, either overrated or underrated that you can think of or want to chat about?
Yeah, so I was going to ask you that question before I wrapped up, but I'll answer first before I ask you. But I like Seton Hall a lot. Sticking with the Big East theme of the pod, I think they can make a run this year. You know, they have a senior laden team, right? The class that came in that was headlined by Isaiah Whitehead. Obviously, he's not there anymore, but the rest of those guys are there playing well. Delgado is just a monster, double-double machine. You know, they just Harrington and Aaron Gordon, the transfer, Miles Power, they have just a lot of talent. Desi Rodriguez, they have balanced six or seven guys deep. They don't seem to have any drop off. And I think they're going to be able to make a run.
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely a senior laden team, Dusty Rodriguez. He was, you know, fairly under recruited, or maybe underrated playing with Whitehead in high school, and then coming with him to Seton Hall. But he has been good, and Delgado is a beast. You know, coming off the bench, we'll see if the 6'10" Sandro will be able to give them anything down the road. But yeah, I know, you know, they've kind of been up and down, but interested to see how high you are on them. I guess they only have one conference loss, so starting out strong and only three losses overall. I would say for myself, I got to watch Gonzaga in person about 2 weeks ago, and granted, you know, now that they're playing in conference play, they're only really playing, you know, two or three tough games on the year with St. Mary's and BYU, but I got to watch them play Loyola Marymount, which basically turned into a home game for Gonzaga with all the California Gonzaga fans that there are. But they go pretty deep. Really like Jonathan Williams, kind of his length, I think is definitely impressive. And, you know, they have some good experienced guards, along with Zach Norvell, a Chicago guy who can shoot the ball. And then I'm going to botch his name, so I won't even try to pronounce it, but the 6'8", Hashimura, definitely was very impressive off the bench. I know he's been getting a lot of NBA looks from his play over the summer, but there's a few times he would just catch the ball off the rebound and either push it and finish. He had a few fadeaways and 15-foot jump shots, so he was pretty impressive, and you know, Mark Few is a great coach. So I'm kind of buying on Gonzaga, and you know, it probably won't be a run to the championship again, but they should definitely make a deep run in the NCAA tournament once that time comes around.
They're always good, right? And they don't really get challenged in conference play, so you never know how they're going to be when they get into the tournament. But you know, between Mark Few and they have a lot of returning talent, I think they're probably a little bit undervalued at the moment.
Yeah, well, I guess that'll wrap up our buy and sell, but definitely glad to finally get you on the pod and hear about your experience in Lawrence. I know a lot of people kind of wish they had been there and want to go there, so hopefully you had a good time and can check that one off of your bucket list. But as the January, you know, starts to get further on and February comes around, conference play, we'll definitely have to have you on again, and we can assess how we are doing in the conference pool and what teams are going to be dangerous in March. So thanks for coming on the podcast.
Great. Thanks for having me, Sean. And yeah, look forward to being back on again soon.
All right. Well, that wraps up another edition. So if you are a listener, feel free to leave a review at iTunes or become a regular subscriber, as we'll be trying to pump these out on a weekly basis.